Welcome back, everyone, to a Wednesday edition of The Damage Report. I'm John Iadarola. We got two good pieces of news. The first, Jared Jackson's here. The second, Tomb Raider is coming back with a sequel starring Alicia Vikander, and I'm so excited. Okay, I'm mostly joking.
And one of these pieces of information is much more exciting than the other.
It is, it is. Well, look,
you decide.
You're here every Wednesday. A Tomb Raider movie only happens every 5 or 6 years, honestly, at this
point. I say we start this JR Wednesday with a random thought that just
What's came
that? To me when I was in the kitchen.
Mine wasn't random enough? What's yours?
Extra crunchy peanut butter should be a mandate in every American's household. Extra crunchy. Just saying. It provides a good crunch to your sandwich.
Along with the peanut butter
that you already have. Mm-hmm. Sure, use the smooth every once in a while, but definitely the crunchy should at least be there as an option.
So I used to watch Alton Brown, his cooking show. It's a lot of science and stuff. It's you making stuff with science. Now, you might think that you can make smooth from crunchy, but not vice versa. Uh-huh. But if you get loose gravel and you just throw it in your creamy, you have a nice crunch for your sandwich. So, you know, if you run out, you can always do that.
Un-American.
This morning, I tweeted that an optimal cup of coffee should be half coffee, half milk. And I did it knowing I'd be dragged across the internet. He has somehow come up with a worse food take.
Oh my God, no,
crunchy?
no. The coffee
drinkers. Do you hate your teeth?
The coffee drinkers are much more rabid than
That's
the
true.
Creamy than peanut the, butter people.
Yeah, the peanut butter boys.
Again, this isn't against smooth peanut butter. This is just means you should add this one to your diet. It's just peanuts. We're acting like this is a horrible thing.
I don't want a random crunchy thing in my sandwich like that. I don't know. I think that's weird. Man.
It's like not putting celery in your chicken salad so you can have a nice crunch.
That's not a terrible point. Okay, now, aside from movie news, peanut butter news, there is a little bit of political news at least. So look, in a second, we're gonna turn to gun violence. Two different stories having to do with that. But later on, we've got NYPD DNA databases. We've got climate change. We've got more misogynistic attacks against those fighting to deal with the climate crisis. We also have a preview of Donald Trump's revenge that's coming after he leaves office. This is was revealed in a book that hasn't even come out yet by Bill O'Reilly. We're going to preview what that revenge will look like at the close of the show. So you are gonna wanna stick around for the full thing. Before that though, and before more of my thoughts on the sequel to Tomb Raider, we're gonna turn to gun violence. And we've got some interesting video to respond to here. If you were to put together experts on gun violence and start to rank the things that could deal with it, forget about the top 20 or 30. They're not gonna happen because the NRA controls all the people with the power to do something about it. But if you were to get way, way down, what can we do? What sad, pathetic last resort are we left with? It might look something like this.
So one of the ideas behind this curved hallway is to cut down on the line of sight of an active shooter. And then to further cut down the line of sight of an active shooter, we installed these wing walls. And it also provides a place for students to hide behind if there's a threat down at the other end of the hallway.
And this won't look like this eventually. There'll be furniture in here, right? This is a comfortable place.
Yes, this has been designed to be a learning corridor. This is a learning space. And so there'll be technology kiosks in places like this. Yeah. There'll be relaxed seating around, similar to a college commons area.
Are you trying to de-emphasize the security aspect?
Absolutely. When students come to school, I don't want them to have to worry about security. I want them to worry about learning.
I would also like that. So that's Kate Snow of NBC News. I got nothing against NBC News for previewing that they're building schools now to make it marginally harder for a mass shooter. But that is, I mean, how pathetic is our country? How pathetic is our government, that's what we're doing.
And so this is happening in construction in schools, however long this is gonna take. And then we have to consider how many times other shootings may happen in that time frame. And this is again one school. This is gonna be the set in place to put differentiating walls up and throughout, I mean, whether like the cascading corridors of walls up so the shooter has a harder shot. And how many schools? So which privileged schools get this level of construction and change? Yeah. And number two, what about when the children decide to walk outside? Because this is still America. When you're outside and the trees are there and then there's some shooters there. Maybe they go to a concert, maybe they go to a restaurant, maybe they go to a festival. It doesn't matter because this is happening everywhere. So when we focus on it being just in schools, and we're gonna protect our children from this gun violence. Children are not only in schools. A 17-month-old baby was shot down in Odessa, Texas over the weekend. She's not in school yet. She was shot anyway in her mouth. So it's cool, I hear you, but this, my first point is this isn't gonna spread to every school, so which kids are gonna still continue to be unsafe? And then after they leave school, then what do we do? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and even if it's not gonna spread to every school, there's thousands of schools, but even if it did, like I've talked about before on the show, if you were to sketch out the timeline, a person is gonna shoot up a school, there's a threat to a school, you have all this time to do something about it, with regulations, laws, interventions for the individual, we're ceding all that ground all the way from this kid's got a mild problem that could someday turn into violence. We're giving up on that. We're giving up all the way to he's got his assault rifle. He's in the hallway. Let's make it curved a little bit. So we've ceded all that territory. Now it's like, well, you can hide behind this little like wall that comes out. So That's pathetic. That's, again, it's like a civilization committing suicide. It's like we can't handle this. We're not responsible. We're not adults. We're gonna put a little wall out. That's what you got, youth of America. If he's coming at you with a shotgun, an assault rifle, we're gonna give you a little like thing that comes out like this. That's the best we can do, honestly, because that little wall doesn't cut into the profits of gun manufacturers. Actually doing something about the fact that all of these killers seem to agree that having an assault rifle is the best way to kill as many people as possible. We're not gonna do anything about that. You've got this. That's what you've got.
And you know what? You said you didn't want to fault NBC News for doing this report. Mm-hmm. I also don't necessarily want to fault the companies that now find an opportunity to make money off of our killing spree the mm-hmm. way we do in this country. So, you know, if you're a construction company, you may pitch this to schools and be like, are you worried about the violence? Do you want to protect your students? Or the families worried? Hey, we can install this kind of corridor wall construction, give us this money for it. Mm-hmm. We can put in these steel doors with 12 bolts that shoot out. That'll cost you $6,000. You ready? Mm-hmm. So the opportunity to continue to be the number one thing in this country, which is a capitalist, at the peril of people who don't have the same capabilities or I guess companies put in place, because we know how our capitalism actually benefits companies first. Mm-hmm. If you can benefit off of this, go ahead and do it. And that's what's happening now.
Yeah, and we're gonna see more of that. Let's go through, there's some things. You've probably seen some of these before, but how else are we protecting kids other than, you know, the little wall? Well, a Jewish school in Brooklyn is installing bullet-resistant doors in the wake of mass shootings. So the doors will be a little bit stronger. And hell, I understand. I guess, like, if that's what you've been left with, if you've been so abandoned by those in a position of power to protect you, then you might have to get some bullet-resistant doors. And you know, on the other side of those doors, you might have kids with bulletproof backpacks because those sales have been surging. And you know what? They're making bulletproof clipboards. And maybe the doors on the kids' little cubbies, you know, where they put their little bag in the morning, maybe we can have those removable and that'll be bulletproof so that the kid can hide behind their cubby door, because that is our country.
Yep, that's the way it works. Hey, you know, bulletproof diapers, because you know, your kid's not
in school
yet. Maybe it's a toddler. They need to. The opportunity to make money off of tragedy is the American way. Mm-hmm. And we're doing it again. Again, I'm not necessarily faulting, because if you have your kid in a position where they can possibly be harmed, you'll do anything to protect them. You'll be like, sure, I'll buy that bulletproof backpack. And you'll forget, damn it, I have to buy a bulletproof backpack. Mm-hmm. Instead of going, hey, what are we gonna do about the fact that I need to buy my child a bulletproof backpack? We skip that step.
And the amazing thing is that at the same time that look, there are Democrats as well that are getting money from the NRA, and hopefully some of them will lose in primaries later this year or early next year. But we know that it's mostly the Republicans, and it's mostly the Republicans who also both want and have the reputation as we're the ones who will protect you. We're the responsible ones. We're the alpha males, not those bleeding heart libs. We'll protect you, not from guns. You're gonna get shot. Like, imagine when, you know, when Miami starts to get flooded in a couple of decades. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm a serious politician. What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna buy everyone a Roomba that's gonna suck up some of the water that's flooding into their living room. Or imagine if there were like packs of tigers rampaging through Baltimore. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna give everybody a stapler, so when you get all scratched up, you can staple the wound shut. You know what? Because I'm a responsible politician and I'll protect you. Not like these damn libs who wanna get rid of the tigers, who wanna stop the oceans from rising. That's irresponsible, that's crazy. I'm gonna Roomba and staple you up. That's what I'm gonna do. That's They're building little walls. It's curved slightly. And by the way, you saw the video. Ain't that curved? You can see down the whole thing. How is that gonna protect anyone?
Assault rifle, assault weapon you're running through the school with. Take some turns, shoot on, I don't know.
It will work if he has his assault rifle and his feet are stapled to the ground. So maybe you can use your tiger stapler and you can staple his feet to the ground and then he can't move down the curved hallway.
This is a good startup company.
This is a good, yeah, I'm gonna make some money. This is, God, we are so pathetic. Okay, let's move on to something somewhat equally pathetic. As Hurricane Dorian was bearing down on the US, we also had another mass shooting, probably more than one. I saw one in the news because not everyone actually makes national news, but there was another mass shooting in Texas. And so you've got multiple different threats to worry about. Donald Trump, who of course spent this same time while we were dealing with the mass shooting with the hurricane, he's off golfing or whatever, improving his putting game. He got criticized because he wasn't taking his responsibility seriously. And the criticism came from a common foe of Donald Trump, and that is London Mayor Sadiq Khan, who said he's clearly busy dealing with a hurricane out on the golf course. So he made fun of him to some extent for not taking the threat seriously. And so Donald Trump saw that criticism and he put down his driver and he went back to work. I'm kidding. He took out his phone and he tweeted at the guy saying, "The incompetent mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, was bothered that I played a very fast round of golf yesterday." Brief note, there's no fast round of golf. Golf is one of the slowest games you can literally play. Many Poles exercise for hours or travel for weeks. He definitely does not do the former. Me, I run through one of my courses, very inexpensive. President Obama would fly to Hawaii. Khan should focus on knife crime, which is totally out of control in London. People are afraid to even walk the streets. He's a terrible mayor who should stay out of our business. So if we have this hurricane issue, if we have tons of people being killed all the time in mass shootings, it's actually London who should be worried about their knife crime.
Knife crime problem because people are afraid to walk the streets. That doesn't happen here in America. People are not afraid to walk the streets because of gun violence. So if that's the basis for your criticism and people are also afraid to walk the streets here, what are you gonna do about it? Just take his own point and ask him the question, because when someone like this guy doesn't have a point, it's really easy just to ask him. So what are you gonna do about it?
Yeah.
What about the knife crime that you're worried about in London?
Yeah, yeah. How about you let them worry about the knife crime, which is an issue that they're dealing with, and you do something about your lack of interest in dealing with hurricanes and also the fact that these mass shootings are becoming a constant problem. You know what, like Ted Cruz, who was tweeting about, like, oh, well, does Chicago deal with its own stuff? Well, yeah, Chicago should deal with its crime. But you say that, again, you're from the party that protects people. You defend your people, and Texas is being ravaged by gun violence constantly. You're off, you know, filming campaign ads, you baking bacon on your gun barrel. That doesn't seem to be solving the problem. I know it seemed like it would, but it didn't, you know? So maybe come up with something else. Now let's talk about that knife crime though, because they wanna make that comparison. And every time we talk about increased gun control in the US to take guns out of the hands of people who wanna murder people, they will then say, well, you know, people in Japan use knives, people in London use knives. And in fact, there is quite a bit of knife crime. It's on the rise. It's gone up significantly in the past few years. 43,000 knife crimes were recorded in England and Wales between March of 2018 and March of 2019. There's a lot of bad news when it comes to knife crime in London. It's serious, but I did find one silver lining, and it's that in every single instance of knife crime, the person was using a knife instead of a gun, which would have killed far, far more people. That is indisputable. No serious rational person can say, no, if I were going to try to kill as many people as possible, I'd rather have a knife. And so knife crime, serious. Some people have died, we're gonna give you the numbers. But thank God they did not have assault rifles in those cases. So let's talk about the numbers. In the US, in the first 9 months of 2019, there have been 287 mass shootings, which every news show in the country should lead every broadcast with that statistic. Hundreds of mass shootings in the first 9 months of this year alone. Those mass shootings have killed 308 people and wounded an additional 1,200. Now bear in mind, way more people die from guns. This is just from mass shootings, the hundreds of mass shootings that we have. I mean, more than 10,000 homicides by guns in 2017 alone. And so, yes, a few people have died in London from knives, but there's really not much we can teach them about controlling violence, since again, we're focusing on curved hallways and little inlets.
It's tired. They're uninterested in solving the problem. We already know that this is just another diversion. So we didn't have to go through the knife numbers and everything. It's chasing our own tail.
Right winger will say, making guns illegal doesn't matter because that only stops law-abiding people from getting the guns. The criminals will get the guns anyway. And yet in that same 2017, when we had 10,000 gun homicides, England and Wales had 29 gun-related deaths of all types, not just homicide. Yes, it's a smaller country, but that's 29 versus 10,000, more than 10,000, because that's just the homicides. It does work. It's maddening that they can't get that all of these countries that have strong gun control, so many of them, countries that Israel, for instance, that they want to emulate in every way except all of the ways that they actually differ from us, the idea that they can still claim that criminals will just be able to get the guns. What are criminals in England lazy? Are they just not willing to put in the work to go down to the docks and buy a black market gun? Is that why they can't seem to get a gun? I mean, after all, the English people are disarmed. Criminals should just be running wild, get an AR and rob literally every person you see, okay? Go down their chimney and rob them. It's so easy, and yet they can't seem to put it together. Well, maybe there's something to this gun control.
Luckily, you know, all these good guys with guns have thwarted all bad guys in the gun violence every time. It works. Obviously, since that's the plan, it's already been solving itself.
Yeah.
Everyone gets a gun. That's why it doesn't happen anymore.
Exactly. That's why Texas, where there's, I think I read there's like a million people with concealed carry. That number seems high, but that's what I read. That's why there can't be mass shootings, because instantly they're killed by one of the good guys with guns. Okay, we're gonna take a break. We come back, lots more to get to.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
From TV, you've probably gotten the idea that there are DNA databases that police can use to track people down. But you probably haven't thought too much about what it actually takes to get entered into that DNA database. And it turns out in some cases, you might have no idea at all that you ended up there. Joining us now to break down one particular pretty tragic story of this happening, Janika White, welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks.
Glad to have you here. So there is a 12-year-old boy who ended up on this database. Can you tell us about his experience?
Well, from the article and the information that I've seen, he was arrested and being investigated for a felony. Mm-hmm. He was ultimately released and not convicted, and I don't even believe indicted. But his DNA was collected while he was in the custody of the police. And now he is now in a database in New York City, along with several other thousands of people, some who were arrested or even questioned, but not necessarily convicted.
And so, look, I've been reading about the growth of this DNA database and how many people are in it. It says 83,000 people just in this particular one. And it would seem to me like Look, if you are, you know, like you're going to jail or something, they take a sample of your DNA. I sort of can understand that, but this seems like it would run afoul of the Constitution. Do we have any idea if in New York City, if in other parts of this country, simply taking this incidental DNA that you don't realize, you have no consent, is that actually legal to do?
Well, that's actually up for debate. The Supreme Court has not ruled specifically on a case such as this one. You have some different types of rulings. And in a lot of the cases, and of course, constitutionalists and different civil rights lawyers argue that it's a violation of your Fourth Amendment right against search and seizure. And in these particular instances, the way that we've seen the courts rule is that when you have abandoned property, for instance, the Supreme Court did rule sometime back that the police searching a man's trash, discarded trash, was not an illegal search, and they did not need a warrant. Well, you look at these situations where you may be in a police station and they offer you a glass of water or a drink, which is actually what happened to this 12-year-old. And once the 12-year-old left, they took the straw or the cup and they collected DNA and they compared it to whatever DNA they had from the crime scene. And then they put it into the database and they maintained it. And the parents now are fighting to have it removed from the database. The only cases that I was able to find recently where a court actually suppressed the information and said that it was an illegal search was one where a police officer went on a man's patio and kicked off a cigarette butt and collected his DNA. And another one was where a man was being questioned in a police station and the police officer intentionally swapped the water bottle and collected DNA off of the water bottle. In both those cases, the courts, the basis for them excluding that evidence was that in those two cases, the people had not discarded of those materials and it was not really abandoned property and they still had an expectation of privacy to it.
So we know that in the past few years, there's been a little bit more recognition for a lot of people about our information being gathered online, for instance, and that they might exist in these sorts of databases. People are taking that more seriously. I hadn't previously put much thought into these sorts of databases, but do we have any idea of, like for the 83,000 people who are on, for instance, just the New York's database, do we know if people are notified that they're being entered into it? The path to taking your information off of there if you feel like it never should have been put into the database in the first place? Like how much actual access and information do people have about these sorts of databases?
Well, that's interesting. In the article, actually, I think it's about 82,000 who are in the database, but 31,000 of the 82,000, which is about 40%. Of those people are people who were never convicted. And so these are people who were either questioned by police, arrested, or in some of these instances, a part of these, what they call dragnet databases. And that's where they go in the neighborhoods where you may have a serial rapist or a serial killer, and they request that you voluntarily provide your DNA. And in some of these cases that have been reported by several attorneys who are now litigating them in their different jurisdictions, the police may threaten, you know, to hold you longer than necessary if you don't give your DNA, or they use these different tactics to kind of bully you into giving your DNA. And there are just a lot of concerns, of course, about the mass collection of this type of data. And of course, some compare it to fingerprinting, but of course, DNA, you're able to find out a lot more from DNA versus a fingerprint. A fingerprint serves for identification purposes only. And when you start talking about DNA, you're talking about some really valuable information beyond identification.
Yeah, and I guess people would just have to hope that these police departments would never provide the information to any other company that might look to profit off of it, or that there would never be a breach of their servers, a hacker taking the information, or some corporation taking the information. I mean, as you point out, it is not the same as a fingerprint. Sort of on the flip side, what is the argument made by the police for its use? Do we have any reason to believe that there is any good side to these? Have crimes been solved as a result of these databases?
Well, of course. I mean, DNA evidence that's kind of the leading thing. Everyone's looking for that kind of smoking gun, especially after you have all of these shows. Of course, the police and proponents say that, you know, if you're innocent, you don't have anything to hide, you know, no harm, no foul. And of course, that's kind of our constant battle here now as technology develops, is making that balance between our privacy and our expectation of privacy and our safety. And of course, this was a large debate with the change with, you know, airport security after 9/11. There's always this exchange in your expectation of privacy and the need to keep the public safe. And the police believe that, you know, you won't be implicated or it won't be an issue unless you actually are indeed a criminal. But of course, we know that, you know, it's not always true. And I think here one of the deeper issues with the collection of DNA in the way that it was retained in the case in New York with the 12-year-old is just the distrust that it causes. And it kind of highlights that small portion of authorities and officers who can become overzealous and allude to tactics that just are not ones that are seemingly deceitful.
Yeah, a serious issue and one that hopefully people will pay more attention to in the future. Janika White, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
We're gonna take a short break here. When we come back, more on the climate crisis after this. Last week we did a clip about climate change, the people who are fighting to do something about it, and the misogynistic attacks against them. And it was actually received pretty well, pretty reasonably, I thought. Fast forward just a few days and we see that the same people we profiled in that clip are receiving misogynistic attacks yet again. Now let's talk about those. This is AOC and Greta Thunberg. AOC was recently tweeting about some of the horrific damage that was done by the recent hurricane rampaging through the Bahamas. And she retweeted video that I believe was initially spread by Jose Andres, the celebrity chef who's been doing a lot of great work now in that area as well. And take a look at some of the devastation.
Zigzag is gone, Jesus.
Runway is under about 30 feet of water. I can make out all the runway parking.
Abacuea is gone. Yeah. Cherokee's gone. Underwater.
Fire station is gone.
Fire station is gone. Jesus.
So you see that the pilot is just listing off things that are now gone in that community, just underwater, unrecoverable. And so AOC tweeted that video and said, "This is what climate change looks like. It hits vulnerable communities first. I can already hear climate deniers screeching, 'It's always been like this, you're dim, etc.' No, this is about science and leadership. We either decarbonize and cut emissions or we don't and let people die." And she's 100% right. In every environmental concern, it's always going to hit the people who are least well off first. You're seeing that in climate change as well. And lo and behold, on that tweet, I'm gonna not swear, but some of the people that she was predicting are saying those exact same things. It's always been like this. One person literally tweeted, "Islands always sink." That is a common thing. One guy who, at least according to his bio, is a producer on the Mark Levin show. I don't care enough about Mark Levin to confirm it, but this guy responded with, "So the hurricane is racist?" She didn't say anything about race in her tweet. She just didn't. I know that you want to pretend that, whatever. By the way, I point out that tweet because it had 1,500 likes.
She mentioned vulnerable communities being hit first.
Yeah.
So of course he goes straight to saying, you know, so it's racist because the hurricane hits different areas. I mean, you shouldn't have to explain this to people how vulnerable communities are generally. The reason he connected to race is because generally the most vulnerable communities are people of color, mm-hmm, or people with disadvantage, because the people in power don't give a damn and they do whatever they want. And then affect the world in a way and stay away from the consequences of what they've just done. Mm-hmm. So he's bleeding into it and kind of making the point. Oh yeah, the people in power do tend to go after communities of color, mm-hmm, as the ones that disadvantage and the ones that don't have the same kind of infrastructure, which is what we saw in Puerto Rico from the last hurricane that hit last year. So it goes on and on, but now it's her fault for bringing it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Not everyone else's fault for the way we've conducted ourselves.
And by the way, like, if I could try to appeal to the white supremacists in the audience briefly, like when fracking corrupts people's water supply, that affects white people too. When mountaintop removal like devastates communities and adds more toxins to the air and the water, that devastates poor white people too. Like, this affects poor people of all types. You should care about this because you are being exploited too by these same politicians and economic interests. And we also, so look, AOC is getting attacked for simply standing up for these communities and wanting to protect them. But Greta Thunberg as well, the climate activist, only 16 years old. She's in the US right now trying to get people to take this problem seriously. And she's being attacked viciously. We've read you some of those attacks last week. The attacks against her were described recently by British political columnist and activist Owen Jones, saying the bile thrown at Greta Thunberg is motivated by one thing alone. This incredibly intelligent, eloquent, and compassionate 16-year-old has terrified some of the most hateful and reactionary so-called grown-ups on earth. She's achieved more at age 16 than they ever will. And indeed, she is being attacked nonstop. Now, she defended herself, saying when haters go after your looks and differences, it means they have nowhere left to go, and then you know you're winning. I have Asperger's, and that means I'm sometimes a bit different from the norm. And given the right circumstances, being different is a superpower. That's a point that she's come back to multiple times over the past year. She goes on to say, I'm not public about my diagnosis to hide behind it, but because I know many ignorant people still see it as an illness or something negative. And believe me, my diagnosis has limited me before. Before I started school, striking, I had no energy, no friends, and I didn't speak to anyone. I just sat home alone at home with an eating disorder. All of that is gone now since I have found a meaning in a world that sometimes seems shallow and meaningless to so many people. And even that, this is a 16-year-old who's taking time off from her leading a world movement to confront the climate crisis, standing up for people with Asperger's. Those tweets received insane responses. And so just go back to that clip we had last week about misogyny and climate change. There's a lot of really important information there.
It's amazing the anger that people have towards folks that are looking, a kid that's looking to do something different for her world.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I know that you don't like that this is the cause that she's taken or whatever. And if for some reason some 16-year-old decided, you know what, I think getting flamethrowers into everyone's hands, that's my cause, I wouldn't like that. I wouldn't support that. Would never tweet at that person. Like, I can't even conceive of doing that, but I guess we lead very different lives. Okay, we're gonna move on a little bit more on climate change, some of the plans you can expect to roll out later this week from presidential candidates. We'll break those down after this. I read a recent poll that amongst likely voters in the Democratic primary, 96% believe that aggressive action should be taken to confront the climate crisis. And it has certainly taken a long time for the actual candidates, historically going back multiple cycles, to take this seriously. But now they have. And multiple candidates are coming out with awesome plans to deal with climate change. We've already profiled Bernie Sanders' plan, but he's bringing it up more and more. He recently tweeted in the wake of Hurricane Dorian, the fossil fuel industry is now the equivalent of the tobacco industry. It creates death and destruction, then spends billions denying its responsibility. Let us be clear, Hurricane Dorian has everything to do with climate change, which is the existential crisis of our time. Now, he was predictably, laughably attacked multiple times for that, for saying that there's a link between extreme weather events and climate change. He's of course right. And in the 2018 National Climate Assessment published by the federally mandated US Global Change Research Program, they did point to a rise in greenhouse gases as a contributing factor in triggering hurricane activity in the Atlantic Ocean region. I mean, look, just look over the Category 5 storms historically and see how common they were decades ago. They were in existence 100 years or more ago, but they're becoming far more common. And there was one every year from 2016 to 2019. That's the longest continuous span, and it's the span we're still in, okay? So take it seriously. And so Bernie Sanders is talking about it a lot more. We're gonna have some more plans just briefly. But what do you think about this in terms of this like packed primary field trying to differentiate yourself based on dealing with climate change?
It's a little tough. Even I'm starting to gloss over it a little bit because every other day I see one of the candidates with another climate change plan, which is fine, it's great. And we should assess all those and see which one makes sense for tackling the issue itself and why some maybe fall short and the reasons behind it. Because we always know there's basis for plans. But I don't know if the argument needs to change or if the approach or who it is you're trying to convince, like who's your audience? Because I'm always thinking the people who don't believe need to be brought aboard so we can have more of a consensus. And I'm beginning to lose that optimism. Because when you just read some of the responses to this, it's just there's no open mind at all to consider what's going on.
Yeah.
Or when you have basic fact about what happens in June when it's the hottest month on record ever. I think it was June, maybe it was July, I don't remember.
Probably both.
But whenever you say it, they go, oh man, it was 87 degrees here. Last year it was 90 on this day. So you can't really, you can't reason with that kind of argument. So I wonder what the best approach is, because right now I feel like it's not getting anywhere.
I think that you're glossing over how devastating of a counterpoint that is. I'm worried that some climate scientist working on their dissertation just jumped out a window when they heard that rebuttal from some anonymous troll online. I agree. Look, I want to get to the point where there are millions and millions and millions of Americans who will not vote for a politician who is not going to take this seriously. There are that for other issues. There has not historically been that for climate change. People care about it. People work, having to do with it. But they're not necessarily going to decide between candidates based on that. And that's why I think it's important to know about some of these plans. We can't go through all of them because literally this week alone, I think four candidates are coming out with their climate plans. So Bernie had his not long ago. Elizabeth Warren just came out with hers. Castro as well. I think Harris and Klobuchar too. It's too much. It's awesome. I'm glad that they're doing it, but we can't break all of it down.
Criticism for it is a double-edged sword almost, because now you have to either come up with a plan or not. If you don't come up with a plan, we're gonna say, look, they don't take it seriously. If they do, I'm gonna say, oh my God, I'm so tired of seeing these plans. How serious are you? That's just me. So, because many people who didn't have one before or who weren't running on this issue, you wonder, why now? Is it just to quell any kind of criticism towards you for not being on board? How much do you really mean it?
Is
the question that comes.
Exactly. And look, tonight is a town hall, climate change focused on CNN, 7 hours. We're obviously gonna be talking about that tomorrow on the show. I think we'll be breaking down pretty much every minute of it. No, I'm kidding. We're gonna be going over the important points, but look, I'm glad that they're taking it seriously, that the media has been beaten into a position where they're taking it seriously because they didn't care. That the candidates are actually prioritizing it, that is great.
Yeah.
And I think some credit does have to be given to Jay Inslee, who is no longer in the race, but this was his core issue. He had released 6 detailed climate plans totaling over 200 pages, which were praised by environmental policy experts for their rigor. He said at the time he hoped they would raise the ambition of other candidates' climate policies, and I think it is indisputable that that did actually happen. Now, thankfully, voters are taking it more seriously too. And the fact that groups like Sunrise Movement, Extinction Rebellion, politicians like AOC and others made it such a big topic at the end of last year and the first 6 months or so of this year, that certainly set the stage for it. But I'm glad that people are taking it as seriously.
Yeah, overall, I'll stay with the positive side of this. More plans, more discussion is always better.
Exactly. Okay, we do have to take a break. We're gonna come back with one more segment. This has to do with Donald Trump. What are his plans for revenge when he's finally, blessedly, out of office? Okay, so when the day finally comes that Donald Trump walks or alternatively is dragged out of the Oval Office, that's gonna be a great day. But it's not necessarily going to have no downside whatsoever. He's not going to suddenly disappear. His base is not going to go away. His ever presence on Fox News is not necessarily gonna stop either. You're still gonna have to deal with him. But there might be one component that you'll have to deal with that we hadn't previously known about. And that was revealed in this upcoming book that I decided to show a picture of, even though it almost seems like promoting it and I don't want to. So Bill O'Reilly is the latest Republican pundit to have the blank of Trump book. They all have to have it, just like every edgy comedian has to have a special or a book titled Triggered. Every single one, it's so clever and unique. But anyway, so he's got his book and he apparently has talked with Trump. And Trump has revealed his plans for after he leaves office, including revenge. So let's get into a little bit of this. Donald Trump apparently is quoted in the book as saying, I've learned a lot. Fact check shows that's not true. I think this Mueller investigation will go down as one of my great achievements. because the corruption would have never been uncovered. By the way, he doesn't mean his. He means theirs. All these powerful people trying to subvert an election, people wouldn't have known about it. So the Mueller, the whole experience has been good for him because he's learned from it. He's keeping that learning close to the chest, apparently. But he has learned. And coming out of it, though, while he does mention the corruption of, you know, the FBI and the people investigating him, his greatest ire is reserved still for the media. So O'Reilly asked him why he believes the media, these powerful people, are so devious. Trump, by the way, O'Reilly, his career for his the entirety of his life was in the media, but he's still fine with attacking them. Trump replies, "I think about it all the time. In one way, it's positive. It shows that I can take it." So when we talk about Trump versus the media, is your takeaway that he can take it?
Well, he goes with he can take it, but the other part of this is the revenge that he wants to get.
Mm-hmm.
So can you take it, or do you need revenge? So
that's a good point.
Because if you can take it, usually, you know, if you take a punch, you take a punch, you move on.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can't take it, then you fall down, which is what's happening, crumbling right in front of us. By the way, what he said he learned from the Mueller report was that he can do whatever he wants. All of his stuff got exposed, even mm-hmm. him even expressing that he's effed during mm-hmm. the middle of all that.
Yeah.
So he believed it was a problem. When it didn't become a problem because enough people backed him up in his party and enough Democrats didn't want to pursue anything off of all the information we got, he learned he can do whatever the hell he wants to do, get away with it.
You something are 100% right.
Something he's learned since he was 5 years old. Because, mm-hmm. And then in his adult life, in blowing things business-wise, he gets away with that. And he continues the same persona being Mr. Business, art of the deal, great businessman, billionaire. All these things that he gets labeled with, mm-hmm. despite the facts behind it, he thought, oh, maybe as a politician, as president, they'll hold me to some kind of account. I'm going to try it anyway because I've learned nothing in my life. That lesson didn't get learned either.
Yep, that is devastatingly true. He has learned that there are no consequences for anything, honestly. Like, as long as you have some power and some money, you can even break the law then. Like, if you don't have any power or any money, try not to break the law. They could possibly get you for that, especially if you're poor. But just being awful, being terrible, the worst sorts of obvious grift and scamming people, conning people, there's no consequence whatsoever. Think of the worst grifters you can imagine. They're still out there doing their thing. There's no consequences. I don't even want to say his name, but Jacob Wohl is laughably inept and corrupt. He's tried to break the law to frame Robert Mueller, among other people. There is no consequences for anything. You can do whatever you want. And so he did learn that. But he goes on to say about the media, "I don't know why they hate me. I guess it's because I'm an outsider. I did something no one else has ever done. It's about power." Like, come on,
what
man.
What did he do that's no one else has ever done? Won an election?
Win an election as like a reality star? Like, I mean, Ronald Reagan was an actor. Like, you can say that the media is biased against Trump. And that can mean multiple things. Yes, I would agree, most of the media doesn't like Donald Trump. That's true. That's not the same as being biased against him. But sure, they don't like him. But the idea that they don't like him because he's an outsider, come on. What is that, the 15th reason that they dislike you?
We know.
I think the kids in cages would be slightly higher.
Outsider
personally.
Means the white supremacists.
How about calling them the enemy of the people? How about seeing someone march into a newsroom and shoot it up? And then responding by, no, they are the enemy of the people. That might be up there. How about you listing all these people in the media that you despise, that are low IQ, that are dangerous, and someone starts mailing pipe bombs, and you're like, but what are you gonna do? They are the enemy of the people. That's probably at least comparable to because you're an outsider.
The outsider, honestly, it's being able to openly run as a white supremacist in 20, at the time 16, mm-hmm. and get there. He's the first one. We've had plenty of racist presidents in our country's
That's
history.
True.
He's brought it back. That's what he's proud of. Yeah. That's what he's proud of doing.
So let's read the money quote, the revenge quote. He says, "You know, the media doesn't care if they hurt families, but when I leave office, I'll have my revenge. Without Trump, what have they got?" Which I guess you can read as the revenge is that he won't be there. There's a little bit of implicit threat there, but let's ignore the implicit threat, the idea that he won't be there. But the thing is, like, the day he leaves office, if his heart hasn't exploded from all the filet-o fish yet, he is definitely gonna start a media company. So he's still gonna be there. It's devastating to think about, but he's still gonna be there. As always, thank you so much for being here.
As always, fun times.
Tomorrow he'll have his revenge. What are you gonna do without J.R. Jackson? Anyway, thank you everybody watching. We will see you tomorrow morning.
Crunchy peanut butter.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.